today, inside the investigation into how COVID-19 began. It's a year since Chinese scientists released the genetic sequence of SARS-CoV-2, the code for the coronavirus. This was a pivotal moment, enabling us to begin developing the vaccines we are using today. But there is still so much we don't know about this virus. And this week, a team of international experts from the WHO will arrive in China to try and answer one of the biggest questions: how the pandemic began.
The public health importance of this is critical. Because without knowing where the animal origin is, it's difficult for us to attempt to prevent this from happening again.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, will we ever know where COVID-19 came from? Sarah Bosley, you're The Guardian's health editor. And to understand why WHO scientists want to return to Wuhan, we need to understand what they learned about the virus's origins in the early days of the outbreak, and perhaps more importantly, what they failed to learn. When did the WHO first know about the coronavirus?
The first signs that there was a real problem came out of China at the very end of December.
Chinese health authorities are still working to identify the virus behind a pneumonia outbreak in the central city of Wuhan.
I spoke to Maria van Kerkhove, who has actually become famous for her briefings at the World Health Organization, which take place on Zoom twice a week.
But again, I just want to point out that as we go on with this pandemic, more variants, more mutations will be identified.
And she told me that she and a group actually of experts, expert virologists around the world, were always on alert every winter for outbreaks of disease, new viruses appearing. And she got an email on the evening of the 30th of December that gave her some idea that there was trouble brewing in Wuhan.
So we were immediately alerted and worried that this was something that was different.
The Wuhan Municipal Health Commission had issued an urgent notice warning all their medical facilities to be on the alert and putting into effect their emergency plans.
Within a few days, we knew it wasn't flu, it wasn't MERS, it wasn't SARS, it wasn't adenovirus, it wasn't Legionella. So there were pathogens that were being ruled out. Yeah. And the more pathogens that are ruled out, the more it raises your alarm.
The Chinese scientists actually have been cooperating really well with Western scientists after SARS. So they would have been discussing exactly what had been found in Wuhan quite early on.
Okay, so there was a lot of information that the WHO needed to gather. And early on, there was this thought that this had all begun in a wet market in Wuhan. What was the evidence for this?
The Chinese authorities immediately pinpointed the animal market. They themselves thought that might be where the virus was coming from, but there really wasn't a great deal of evidence. What we did know, and this actually came from reporters, I think, in Wuhan, was that a lot of exotic wild animals had been slaughtered at the market and sold there. We actually got a shopping list at one point. An inventory list came out of one of the stalls or shops within the market. And they were selling live wolf pups, golden cicadas, scorpions, bamboo rats, squirrels, foxes, civets, salamanders, turtles and crocodiles.
So the market had been pinpointed as the source. And then in January, another very important piece of information arrived, the genetic sequence of the virus. Why was this significant in the early stages of trying to work out what had gone on?
The genetic sequence was published actually by Chinese scientists. So it was a global effort to get it out there. But everybody was incredibly impressed, first of all, that the Chinese had sequenced it so fast, and then able to look at that and work out how to build tests for the virus and also to start thinking about treatments and particularly vaccines.
The next step was to actually send scientists into Wuhan to find out more about the virus. When did the WHO manage to get in there and who did they send?
WHO sent a team of scientists into China in early February. They were led by Bruce Aylward, who's a Canadian doctor and epidemiologist.
Well, when you first landed, I mean, it was from the moment you landed in China, even on the flight out, but the second you landed, you knew you were dealing with something very serious, Sarah, and that the rest of the world hadn't, potentially wasn't getting it.
I spoke to Bruce about his visit to China, and he told me how strange it was, surreal, in fact.
You know, your footsteps would echo through these great, you know, cavernous halls of the Beijing airport, which is teeming day and night normally. And
what were they able to do when they got there?
Bruce actually told me that they had a lot of access. He said he was taken around Wuhan and he talked to huge numbers of people, both scientists and ordinary people. I believe, though, that he was one of a few who were able to see as much as he did.
What was Bruce able to find out while he was there?
Bruce went into the hospitals. He went to see people who were locked down and to understand how China was actually dealing with the pandemic. Bruce, at that time, was looking mostly to see what this pandemic was. You have to remember that we had no experience of this infection at all in the West at that time. But also, he looked at the market to find out whether there were any clues as to how it began in the first place. And at that point, it was clear that the market had been cleaned up. That's the hygienic thing to do, of course. But in doing so, you sort of destroy any evidence of what might have been there at one point.
Oh, right. So in being very proactive about combating the virus, the Chinese perhaps inadvertently also destroyed some clues.
Yes, you could say they were doing what they needed to do for their own protection, which was to stamp out the virus, but they weren't looking for the source.
What else did Bruce learn that supported the market theory?
Beyond the evidence that a lot of wild exotic animals were being sold in the market, they also have the evidence of the first batch of cases. I think it was something like 40-odd cases that were analysed, and these came out again from Chinese scientists. 70% of those people had some sort of link with the market, in that either they bought their food there or actually they worked there. So that is certainly a big clue. But the very first case, as far as they can ascertain, did not. There is no link, actually, with the first case that is known about, the first person who was actually identified as having this virus in Wuhan.
So we don't know where that first person picked it up from.
Yes, that's right. And that isn't really unusual because that first person may well not have been the first person. They may have been infected by another person and that person may have frequented the market. So it's really hard to know what was the first case, you know, which was case X that began the whole thing.
The Canadian doctor who is part of the team investigating coronavirus in China just in fact returned from Wuhan. Despite concerns the virus is spreading, he praised the work being done in China.
A phenomenal collective action and cooperation by the people of China to this response.
When Bruce came back from China, he gave a press conference to tell people about what he'd found. And he was very enthusiastic. I think he was surprised and admiring of the way that the Chinese had dealt with it.
I mean, we spoke to hundreds of people in hotels, on trains and planes, who are quite outside the system. And they all shared this sense of responsibility, accountability to be part of this.
So he did sound like a bit of a defender of the Chinese approach at that point. And of course, he was lambasted for that by a lot of people who object to China's politics.
And I'm a bit of a broken record on this and you know, forever accused of saying one thing or another about China. But, you know, generally what I'm talking about are the people I worked with and the people I met in the country.
And who else was trying to investigate the source of coronavirus at this point? And what were they discovering?
A lot of scientists were looking at the genome sequence, because that can give you quite a lot of information about where this virus has come from. This, as we know, was a coronavirus, and it had probably come from bats because of the similarities it has to other bat originated coronaviruses, and specifically SARS, you know, severe acute respiratory syndrome, and also MERS, the Middle East respiratory syndrome, which is endemic in dromedary camels. There are actually thousands of coronaviruses in bats, but what you don't know from that is which animal then has been infected by the bat and then has gone on to transmit the virus to humans, because it definitely hasn't come straight from bat to human. Two virologists who've been right at the centre of the hunt for clues to where this virus came from published a review of what you can get from that genetic data in the journal Nature. That came out in March. And what they showed was that the virus's spike protein that we've all heard such a lot about has a specific ability to stick to human cells, which bat viruses don't have. On the other hand, some animals do. And the ones they cited were Malayan pangolins in particular.
Ah, so this was, there were a lot of rumours at the time, weren't there, that this had perhaps developed in pangolins. I remember that.
Yes, I think the story came out from the Chinese media in the first place that pangolins may have been the animal that transmitted it to humans, but they weren't listed in the market in Wuhan. On the other hand, we don't have a comprehensive list of what animals were being sold in that market because a lot of that trade was illegal.
And obviously it's critical for scientists to know which animal had the virus, to understand how it was passed on to humans, and to know if it originated in a wet market at all.
Yes, that's right.
The WHO's investigation was in its early stages then, but already the world was seeing this as a virus that originated in China. The most notable example of this, I think, being Donald Trump referring to it as the Chinese virus in March. Was this having an impact on the WHO's understanding of how this all began?
Yes, the attitude of the Trump administration then became a real problem in finding anything out from the Chinese at all, because President Trump very much labelled it the China virus.
Why do you keep using this? A lot of people comes say from it's China. Racist.
It's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China. That's why. Comes from China. I want to be accurate.
So that sort of blaming makes it very hard then for anybody to take a rational, careful look, objective look at what might have happened. So immediately, I think, the hunt for the origins was in difficulty.
And there was this theory that circulated early on that COVID was developed in a lab in China and leaked out. Donald Trump promoted that theory, but so did members of his administration, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
I can tell you that there is a significant amount of evidence that this came from that laboratory in Wuhan. Look, the best experts so far seem to think it was man-made. I have no reason to disbelieve that at this point.
What do we know about that now?
Yes, this was said and continues to be said, in fact, that the virus came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology lab. This is actually a very good lab. It's a biosecure lab. It's very advanced, you know, and it's well known around the world. So two things, really. First of all, it would have been very much able to detect the arrival of a new virus. And secondly, people said it could possibly have either engineered this virus itself, or it could maybe have been responsible for leaking the virus in some way. Both of those latter theories, though, have been demolished by lots of really expert scientists. That same Nature paper in March, whose first author actually was from the Scripps Research Institute in California, so an American, said very categorically that it hadn't been made in that lab. So the Chinese scientists who work in that lab would be very happy, actually, I think, to discuss their work if they were free to do so. The trouble is the politics within China. So China is always trying to put a good gloss on things. It's very much afraid of people being blamed. It really doesn't like the stories that have come out and the people who've been attacking China. So the very eminent scientists, actually, who work in that lab and others around China don't feel free to speak.
WHO investigators went back to China again in August, but they didn't visit Wuhan. Why not?
at that time, the rhetoric, I think, from Trump and also from the right-wingers on social media had escalated. So there was really no likelihood that the investigators would be allowed in because the Chinese were just too afraid of what would be said. And that, of course, is a two-edged sword because you can shut off the criticism by not allowing people to see anything. But it also allows the rumours to grow and grow because you're not able to say categorically this didn't happen.
This must have been very frustrating for the WHO, and it was making their job very difficult.
It's like sending detectives in to solve a murder mystery. You really need to get to the earliest possible evidence that you can. You need the earliest cases. You need to find out who those people were in contact with and where they had been, possibly to get infected. And none of that can happen if you can't allow people into Wuhan actually to talk and to go around freely and do the investigations that are required.
The United States had already announced its withdrawal from the WHO by this point. Did that have any material effect on their ability to investigate the source of COVID?
I don't think it actually affected their ability to investigate, but I think Trump's decision both to blame the WHO, because he very categorically did, and to claim that WHO was in China's pocket.
You know, we funded, and they seem to be, you know, I said recently in social media, I said they seem to be very China-centric. That's a nice way of saying it, but they seem to be very China-centric. And they seem to err always on the side of China.
It was very damaging to the WHO. It's not even just the money, because that money isn't forthcoming yet anyway. The money's always in advance. They could carry on with what they were doing, but it means that they don't have the support of America. And actually, the American scientists and the public health experts are very important to WHO. They need those people. Just as they have Bruce Aylward from Canada, they have a whole host of people from America who are very important contributors and who would have been part of the team going into China to investigate what happened.
While all this was going on, China was carrying out its own investigation into where the virus began. What do they now think happened?
Well, the line now from China is that it may not have come from China originally at all, that it may actually have started somewhere else. It is theoretically possible that the virus could have come from a third country and arrived in China, where it would have been detected by their very good surveillance systems and hadn't been detected before. But actually, most people think that's pretty unlikely.
Coming up, WHO scientists return to China. Sarah, Chinese authorities announced this week a WHO team is set to arrive in the country this Thursday. Why did it take until now for this to happen?
They've actually been trying to get people in there for months, but there have been all sorts of holdups, most of which we haven't heard about. They appear to be bureaucratic delays from the Chinese end. So the latest thing we heard was that just a few days ago, there were two people en route to China and the rest of the team were about to pack their bags and get on a flight. And suddenly there was a visa holdup.
Today, we learned that Chinese officials have not yet finalized the necessary permissions for the team's arrival in China. I'm very disappointed with this news, given that two members had already begun their journeys and others were not able to travel at the last minute.
That now appears to have been overcome. I think now the question is, though, what they'll be able to do when they get there. And it's quite possible, it's being speculated, that they won't even be able to go to Wuhan, which could be quite an issue for them.
And on that trip, what are those scientists going to try and find out?
Well, I spoke to Peter Daszak about that. He's a British zoologist based in the US these days, and he's one of the members of the team. And he said that they need to get as much data as they possibly can. And for that, they need to be in Wuhan and talking to all those people who would have been collecting any evidence at all. So it's scientists and its doctors. And it's generally trying to track back, though I don't think they're exactly going to go house to house interviewing people to find the first cases.
And how much access do we think they'll be able to have?
It's really hard to know how much access they're going to get now, because the situation has become so tense and there's so much anger around this. And I'm not talking about public anger, I'm talking about political anger, really, between America and China. And unless something can be done about that, about the geopolitical tension there, it's hard to believe that they're going to have a clear run at this. And yet it's really badly needed.
On that first visit to Wuhan, Bruce was trying to find out more about what this virus actually was. But now scientists really need to understand how it began. After a year, how possible is that?
Yes, that's what they want to do, but it may be too late. A lot of time has elapsed now between the first appearance of the virus and where we are and the team going in. So the clues by now, just as they were expunged from the Wuhan market in the interests of cleaning the place up, in the same way, it's going to be very hard now to track back, and you're relying also on people's memories. So if you wanted to try to find out who the first case is, you could go and knock on the doors of the people, perhaps who survived it in hospital. But how much are they really going to remember of who they were in contact with in order to trace back before them, for instance? They're going to be reliant, really, on the scientific data and the medical data that was collected at the time.
Is there a good chance that we may never find out what happened? And if so, what would that mean for the world? I mean, does it matter if we don't know?
It's very important that we do at least try to find out. What the WHO says is that they need to know, because you can prevent further virus introductions. So this particular virus, we already know, has been passed on to other animals. We've seen outbreaks amongst mink, for instance, in some countries in Europe. It's also appeared in cats. So we need to know about the origins and its transmissibility into these other animal species. The more information you have, the more likely it is that you can prevent it spreading to other animals and perhaps mutating, of course, and then coming back into the human population and causing even more deaths.
Sarah, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
That was Sarah Bosley. Find her piece about the COVID origin story at theguardian.com, where you can also keep up with the latest pandemic developments via the UK and Global Live blogs. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert and Monica Whitlock. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.